All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. It's Anti-War Radio. I'm Scott Horton, and our first guest on the show today is Jason Ditz. He's our news editor at antiwar.com. That's news.antiwar.com. Welcome back, Jason. How are you?
I'm doing good, Scott. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Thanks very much for joining us today. Let's talk about the Iraq War. I know it's the summer of 2011, and as far as most people are concerned, there ain't no such thing anymore, but I know better than that, and I was wondering if you could give us the latest. I saw that there were a string of bombings over the weekend, right?
All right. We had one of the deadliest days in over a year in the war, and we've had bombings pretty much on a daily basis. And the Obama administration still talking about how they're open to the idea of staying if only they're asked, which is a somewhat disingenuous comment because they've been demanding to be asked for several months now.
Yes, as we've covered on the show here. And now, help me understand exactly where we're at in that process, because it seemed like Nouri al-Maliki had said, okay, you can keep some trainers because I can give you that without turning it over to the parliament first. Did that stick?
It seems like that much has stuck, but it looks like there's still a push for more. And whether they get more or not remains to be seen.
And now, when they say some trainers, how many is that? Do you know?
We don't know. It's not been clear at all how many they're talking, but it's a lot.
Well, now, and I wonder if Maliki making that decision himself is what Ryan Crocker, the now ambassador to Afghanistan, was talking about in these WikiLeaks cables when he was saying that Maliki is turning toward dictatorship. This was written up by John Glazer at the antiwar.com blog. He had some WikiLeaks here. Did you see this?
Yeah, that could be part of it, but I think Maliki's made a much broader grasp for power than that. He's still the acting defense minister, the acting interior minister. He's also the public security minister. He's kept all the ministries that have any control over any armed forces or law enforcement groups. So he's very much been consolidating power for a while, and the effort to cut Parliament out of the decision on the U.S. troops is just one more step along the way.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, and so what kind of noise is the Parliament making about whether they're going to go along with inviting more troops? Or would they really have to? They do have to go to the parliament on that, don't they?
Theoretically, they should have to go to the parliament, but it's not clear if they would or not. Of course, in the U.S., when the Status of Forces Agreement was passed in 2008, there was a little bit of a question of whether or not President Bush should go to Congress about it, and he just decided no, he wasn't going to. And that was pretty much the end of that. So it seems like they're hoping to go the same way with the Iraqi parliament and just cut them out of the process altogether. Because getting
right,
approval
they never held
for
a referendum.
Right. The 2008 vote was narrowly passed with the promise of a referendum within 6 months, bringing the question to the Iraqi people. And that referendum, years later, never happened. So it was a pretty ugly battle at the time, and it's probably going to be much uglier this time around.
Yeah, well, you know, it's really too bad that we can't read Nouri al-Maliki's mind. I wish I could, but it seems to me like there's at least a good chance that he's more or less playing the same script that he played in 2008, which is, okay, I'll try to convince him to let you keep all these bases. I'll do my very best, but then by the end of the year, time was up. You got to sign, and they signed a deal, no bases, and everybody out by the end of 2011. And, you know, I'm kind of thinking that maybe that's what's going on here, is he's playing smart politics and telling the Americans that you know, I'm doing my very best to oblige you here. I'm trying to get permission out of these guys, but I'm having trouble. But then again, I guess, you know, it's not hard to imagine that he could figure he needs our help still.
Certainly, and the U.S. troops are going to be there largely to prop him up, so it's not hard to imagine that he would see that as a good thing.
And now, do you know, roughly how many bases are still occupied by American troops there?
There's
50,000 left still, huh?
I'm not really sure on that. It's they've made a big deal about turning a couple of bases over to the Iraqi government, but obviously they've kept some, so exactly how many, I really don't know.
Yeah, I'd like to look into Kurdistan. I remember Hillary Clinton in the primary election against Obama talking about she would like to, if nothing else, keep air bases up in Kurdistan. I mean, it's all about, the Donald Rumsfeld's lily pad policy of having bases everywhere so you can attack anything from, pretty much anywhere at a moment's notice, right? As long as we can keep a couple of places to launch planes from, then Iraq is our little aircraft carrier over there.
Right. Right, they don't need a massive number of bases there, so long as they have some.
Yeah. Well, and, it looks like all the, European companies and I don't know, maybe Chinese ones are getting the rights to all the oil over there. And so, really, I mean, if that's all we get out of it is a couple of air bases, it'd be pretty sad at the cost of trillions and trillions of dollars and at least a million lives, 4 or 5 million refugees. I mean, I think people want to forget now already and just imagine that Bush administration was like the Eisenhower era back decades and decades ago or something, that this, all these truths are long since irrelevant. But it seems like those people over there have paid a hell of a price already, and it ain't even over yet.
Right. It's not over by a long shot, too, if the administration has their way. I mean, before he left office, Secretary Gates was talking about keeping troops in Iraq for years to come. So there seems to be at least some stomach within the administration to just keep this war going pretty much indefinitely, which probably didn't sound as bad a year ago when violence was at least a relative low, but it's kept going up since then.
Yeah, well, so here's my silver lining on it. It makes a great campaign slogan for Ron Paul in the Iraq War, because it needs to be ended, but it also calls Barack Obama out on his lie that he would have this thing over in 16 months.
I'm not sure with a Ron Paul slogan anyone's going to hear it, because it's not like the media is going to cover it.
Right. Well, although they might cover not covering it. Apparently not covering something is newsworthy, but actually covering that thing that they're not covering is not. These are the rules that our American media operate under now. Except for Jason, thank goodness. You can find his stuff at news.antiwar.com. We're going to talk more about some of the bad stuff contained therein when we get back after this. All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. It's Anti-War Radio. I'm talking with Jason Ditz. He's our news editor at antiwar.com. That's news.antiwar.com. And I wonder if you can tell us now what you know is the latest coming out of Libya. Everything going swimmingly over there?
Well, the story out of Libya is largely as it has been off and on for the past 5 months. Officials with the rebel side are predicting a quick victory now. They're on the offensive, and say they're on the outskirts of taking Tripoli, which NATO's already saying they have no reason to believe they actually would be able to do. And as usual, it's largely expected that the offense is just going to stall once they get to Tripoli, and then counteroffensive will take back what little territory was lost in this offensive and put everything back the way it was at the start.
All right, well, so let me try to give the Empire's best-case scenario here. These territorial gains must have inspired new people to join the ranks of the rebels and assist them, right? Because it couldn't still be the case, could it, Jason, like it was a few weeks ago when Patrick Coburn was on the show talking about how there's more media than fighters at the front lines?
Well, it looks like that's still the case. This southern village that they've been touting having taken over, the talk is that they have maybe 100 to 150 fighters on the ground there. The number in Zawiya hasn't been released, but it seems to be at least a little larger than that. But the idea that these two forces are going to merge on Tripoli as just a few hundred ragtag, poorly trained and poorly equipped rebels and take over the capital city that's been reinforced with virtually the entire what's left of the Libyan military is just ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, what about after the killing of the head general there? What were the repercussions inside the rebellion? There were a few articles about, you know, splits hardening. Did they work it out?
It's not really clear that it's been worked out, although they seem to have at least calmed people down somewhat about it. Their first move was to sack the entire cabinet except for the prime minister, and the prime minister blamed everyone else in the cabinet for being behind the killing. That seems to have at least pacified the family members of the general somewhat, because they were talking about having their tribe start attacking the rebels, and they've at least backed off of that for the time being, but reserve the right to start back up any time if they feel that they're not being genuine in trying to get to the bottom of this assassination.
Hmm. Well, you know, if you take all the dead bodies out of it and everything, this is really kind of hilarious in a way, right? We got this war here on behalf of a few hundred, maybe a thousand something rebels who don't have their act together in the slightest degree whatsoever, fighting this civil war for months now.
Well, and not only that, but these rebels have sort of tried to claim the banner of pro-democracy protesters that got everything started, but the idea that they represent them anymore seems a little far-fetched, because all they've done in the past few months, other than launch unsuccessful offensives against Gaddafi, is stifle dissent within their own territory and run the eastern part of the country like a horrible dictatorship.
Yeah, did you see Susan Rice, the American ambassador to the United Nations, on the Colbert Report the other day?
No, I didn't.
Oh, yeah, he asked her, so what's going on there in Libya? She's, oh, we saved the lives of tens of thousands of civilians. He was going to go into Benghazi and kill them. And we saved them, and everything's going great. And poor Colbert didn't even challenge. He said, okay, I'm going to accept that answer. And all he had was, so why don't we bomb Syria then? And,
well,
of course,
and
she said, well, the Syrians have asked us not to bomb them.
Right, that's been the underlying lie of this whole war, that Benghazi was about to be overrun by the Gaddafi forces, and NATO swooped in and saved them at the last minute, which is ridiculous, because the regime's offensive was already stalling on Thursday when the United Nations approved the bombing campaign and had completely stopped long before the bombs actually started falling on Saturday. It would have been, and indeed was, just one of many stalled offensives. And the rebels took back the territory that they lost. But the idea that it was because of the NATO bombing, it just doesn't hold any water at all. It seems like, if anything, the NATO bombing has kept these two sides from either reaching an agreement or figuring out that they're not going to reach an agreement and talking partition.
Yeah, although that's directly counter to the UN resolution that authorized the whole thing, right? Which said, like, first principle here, Libya will stay Libya. And its borders intact no matter what.
Right. The United Nations isn't very keen on new countries being formed. I mean, every once in a while they'll put up with one if everyone on the Security Council's okay with it, which isn't very often, but...
Hey, the Republicans even tried to stop the Soviet Union from breaking up. Bush Sr. sent James Baker over there. No, no, no. We like the USSR where it is.
Right. I don't know why that is, if it's just a case of it being expensive to print new maps or what. But...
Yeah, that very well could be it, I guess. Well, and you know, I hate to be such a technicalitarian about this, Jason, but maybe it's worth reminding people that they said that they're going to do a no-fly zone in order to protect the lives of civilians, and that in doing so, the whole mission would take days, not weeks. Never mind months or a year or something like that or more. And that, you know, basically, as long as they had air superiority, these rebels were going to win the war, lickety-split, whatever. Here we are months later. It's not even, it's a back-page story now. Nobody even cares anymore. Oh, yeah, we got this war in Libya, too, but it's like a footnote.
Right, that mostly doesn't get mentioned in the U.S. press, but when British officials or French officials talk about it now, the prevailing narrative is that they don't think the rebels really have what it takes to take over the country anyway, even with air superiority and constant airstrikes.
Right, which is why the British just recognized them as the sole legitimate government of Libya.
Right, and British officials are saying the only way they're going to take Tripoli is if something happens that someone in Gaddafi's inner circle just assassinates him, takes over, and surrenders, which doesn't seem like it's likely to happen, even though they're expressing hope that it's going to at some point.
Well, you know, they're liable to get frustrated and just start carpet bombing Tripoli, you know?
It's certainly possible, although it seems like most of NATO's okay with a status quo that's just a bombing campaign that lasts for years.
It'll be our new West Bank. We'll just, our new Gaza Strip. We'll just build a fence around it and bomb it every once in a while, accuse them of firing Roman candles at us over the fence, you know.
Or our new pre-2003 Iraq.
Right.
But,
yeah, much worse.
The hope for the French government was to have everything wrapped up by Bastille Day so they could have a big, victory celebration for President Sarkozy in France, because he was, of course, one of the big backers of this war. But that's a month ago now, so that obviously didn't happen. And there's not any big holidays coming up for any of these countries anymore, so it seems like they're probably going to be fine to just let this continue until next year and hope they can win the war at an opportune time then.
Yeah, wow, really is amazing. I can't get over it. I mean, of all the ridiculous wars, I'm sort of in shock. Like, you know, when they announced we have a policy of regime change in Iraq, we're going to tell you any lie that we need to for the next year and a half to make it okay, and then we're going to do it. And it was kind of shocking and astounding that, like, wow, I can't believe that they're announcing a premeditated war like this a year in advance. It's the same sort of jaw-dropping kind of thing, like tripping and falling into the dumbest war like this, and then just roll right on. All right, thanks, Jason, very much. Appreciate it. News.antiwar.com, everybody.
Thanks for having me.